Ancient sources give a description of the deluge that differs greatly from the pageant of showers pouring from above on a peaceful land and peaceful sea. The deluge in rabbinical sources. During the 7 days when the world was flooded by sheets of light, and terrifying signs and commotion filled the heavens, the Holy One reversed the order of nature, the sun rising in the west and setting in the east. But during the deluge the sun and the moon shed no light, and for an entire year the planets did not follow their regular courses. It may be that because of dust discharged by volcanoes the sky remained veiled for a long period, and this veil made any celestial orientation impossible for the few survivors. But quite possibly the statement refers to a change in the celestial orbits. The rabbinical sources add that the earth was quaking, and the sun was darkened, and the foundations of the cosmos were dislodged. The entire world was in volcanic activity. Amidst lightnings and thunders a very loud sound was heard in the entire world, never heard before. The flood was caused by waters pouring from above, but also by waters drawn up from the ground. All the fountains of the great deep were broken up, and all the windows of heaven were opened. The waters that came from the sky were heated. Many passages in the rabbinical literature refer to the heated water. The rabbinical literature also refers to great tides and surges of water that covered the face of the earth. The flood began to toss the ark from side to side. All inside of it were shaken up like lentils in a pot. It is also said that not one, but many arks or vessels were used as a means of escape. But they were ruined or capsized one after the other in the surging water. Judged by this, one would think that there were ample signs of the impending catastrophe, and attempts to organize rescue by preparing boats or ships, all probably destined to fail. The biblical account, in order to explain the survival of the human species and some land animals, made the Ark of Noah the central theme of the story. There must have been many Noahs, and the Midrashim also say so, but probably none of them escaped with his boat the outrages of nature. Possibly, in some caves high in the mountains, in far separated regions of the earth, human beings survived the deluge, but hardly any vessel or ark, and saw the attempt to find the remains of an ark on Mount Ararat are probably as futile as looking for the ribs of Adam. Yet such attempts are made even in our time. The duration of the flood is described differently, 40 days, and also much longer. Like the former catastrophe of the fall of man, this catastrophe of the deluge, according to the Hebrew cosmogony, changed the nature of herb, animal and man. The prosperity of the time before the great flood was gone, never to return. The world lay in ruins. The earth was changed, even the sky was not the same. The continents changed their places in the former catastrophes, and once again in the catastrophe of the deluge. The areas which are now the shores of the Mediterranean were the shores of an open ocean, or so one may conclude from the following statement: before the birth of Noah, the sea was in the habit of transgressing its bounds twice daily, morning and evening. Afterwards it kept within its confines. As volcanoes erupted, the sky was darkened, and the ocean swelled and rolled on a helpless planet that fluttered when caught in hydrogen clouds of cosmic origin. The rings of Saturn. One instance of the Saturn myth can be verified with the help of a small telescope. Saturn is in chains. Instead of solving anything, this fact presents a new problem that demands a solution. How did the ancient Greeks and Romans know that Saturn is encircled by rings? It is strange that this question was not asked before. The existence of these rings around Saturn became known in modern times only in the 17th century, after the telescope was invented. They were first seen, but misunderstood, by Galileo and understood by Huygens. If the myth did not by mere chance invent these rings, the Greeks must have seen them. The last case could be true if the Greeks or some other Oriental people possessed lenses adapted for the observation of celestial bodies, or if the rings around Saturn were visible to the naked eye at some time in the past. Today they are not visible without magnifying instruments. There are cases of exact observations by the Chaldeans which suggest the use of some accurate technical means. These means could consist of a sort of astrolabe like that of Tycho Brahe, who made most accurate observations of celestial bodies without the help of a telescope, Also Copernicus, prior to Tycho de Brahe, made all his calculations of the movements of the planets before the telescope was invented. But neither Tycho de Brahe nor Copernicus saw the rings. The statue of Saturn on the Roman capital had bands around its feet, and Macrobius in the 5th century of our era, already ignorant of the meaning of these bands, asked, "But why is the god Saturn in chains?" In the Egyptian legend Isis, Jupiter, swathes Osiris, Saturn. The Egyptian appellative for Osiris was the swathed. In the Zendavesta it is said that the star Tistria, Jupiter, later Venus, keeps Perico in twofold bonds. Saturn is encircled by two groups of rings, one larger and one smaller, with a space in between. To see this, a better telescope than that used by Galileo or that used by Huygens is needed. The twofold structure of the girdle was first observed in 1675. The rings of Saturn were known also to the Aborigines of America before Columbus discovered the land. This means also before the telescope was invented at the beginning of the 17th century. An ancient engraved wooden panel from Mexico shows the family of the planets. One of them is Saturn, easily recognizable by its rings. Nor were the Maoris of New Zealand ignorant of them. One of the great mysteries connected with Saturn is the still unanswered question of how the ancient Maoris of New Zealand knew about her rings, for there is evidence that they did have a Saturnian ring legend long before the days of Galileo. In the myth it is said that Jupiter drove Saturn away and that on this occasion Saturn was put in chains. If these words mean what they say and are not a meaningless portion of the myth, in a dream, at least, there are no meaningless parts, then the knowledge of the ancients about the rings of Saturn could have been acquired because of better visibility. In other words, at some time in the past Saturn and Earth appear to have been closer to one another. Originally I assumed that the rings of Saturn may consist of water in the form of ice, but since the ancient lore all around the world tells that it was Jupiter that put these rings around Saturn, I considered that they might have some other components, too. Since the 1960s spectroscopic study of the Saturnian rings has confirmed that they consist most probably of water in the form of ice. Saturn's Golden Age. The age that man later called the Age of Kronos, Saturn, was remembered with nostalgia as an age of bliss. References to the Age of Kronos in the ancient lore are very numerous. Hesiod tells of a golden race of mortal men who lived in the time of Kronos when he was reigning in heaven. And they lived like gods, without sorrow of heart, remote and free from toil, miserable age rested not on them. The fruitful earth unforced bare them fruit abundantly and without stint. They dwelt in ease and peace upon their lands with many good things. Similarly writes Ovid in the 6th book of his Metamorphoses. In the beginning was the golden age, when men of their own accord, without threat of punishment, without laws, maintained good faith and did what was right. The earth itself, without compulsion, untouched by the hoe, unfurrowed by any share, produced all things spontaneously. It was a season of everlasting spring. Rabbinical sources recount that men lived under very favorable conditions before the deluge, and that these contributed to their sinfulness. They knew neither toil nor care, and as a consequence of their extraordinary prosperity they grew insolent. The dominance of Saturn at some remote period in the history of the life of the peoples on Earth was of such pronounced and all-pervading character that the question arises whether the adventures of the planet going through many exploits could by itself be the full cause of the worship of the planet and the naming of the Golden Age the Age of Kronos, Saturn. Saturn exploded and caused the Earth to go through the greatest of its historical catastrophes, and this was completely sufficient to make of Saturn the supreme deity. But it appears that the Age of Saturn is a name for the epoch before the deluge. After the deluge Saturn, dismembered, almost ceased to exist as a planetary body, and when at length it was reconstituted it was fettered by rings, and was far from being the dominant celestial body that would behoove it as the supreme deity of the epoch. The Age of Kronos is so glorious an age that it is hardly thinkable to connect it with the period after the deluge. The wailing for Adonis, Tammuz of the Babylonians, or Osiris of the Egyptians, deplored the end of its dominance, not the beginning of it. Then why was Saturn the supreme deity by whose name the great and glorious age before the deluge was named? Because it removed Uranus from its role of chief deity, and to the onlookers on Earth, emasculated him? If the distances between the Earth and Saturn and Uranus were then what they are now, then such occurrences could scarcely be observable. Uranus is only faintly visible in the night sky over Mesopotamia in a most translucent night. Saturn is clearly visible but is not, for an unaided eye, a spectacle in the sky. It was more voluminous and more luminous before the deluge, but if it moved on an orbit not too different from the present one, and the Earth were moving approximately in the same quarters where it moves today, then the surprise still persists as to how a body on a 30-year-long orbit could make the inhabitants of the Earth on its 1-year-long orbit regard it the supreme of all celestial bodies in the sky. The appellative sun employed for Saturn could be explained by its unusual brightness when it exploded as a nova for a short time, actually for 7 days, before the beginning of the deluge on Earth. Assuming the length of the day in those times to have been not too dissimilar from its present value, the velocity of the moving masses being on the order of 100 kilometers a second or 8,600,000 kilometers in a 24-hour period, and the Earth and Saturn being on the closest points on their reciprocal orbits, or in conjunction, which is another surmise, in 7 days a distance of car. 60 million kilometers would be covered. On present orbits the distance between Saturn and Earth varies from 1,279 million kilometers at superior conjunction to 1,578 million kilometers at opposition. The lesser of these distances is car. 21 times greater than that above calculated. This means also that unless the velocity of the ejected water was an order of magnitude greater than 100 kilometers per second, the distance between Saturn and Earth must have been substantially smaller than it is at present. I have rather arbitrarily selected the figure of 100 kilometers a second for the motion of the exploded material. Today the escape velocity, or the speed required for a projectile on the surface of Saturn to leave the gravitational attraction of the planet is but 35 kilometers a second. For Jupiter the escape velocity is 59 kilometers a second. Assuming that Saturn was of a mass equal to that of Jupiter, the same figure would apply to it too. With 100 kilometers a second we have almost doubled the velocity of escape. The arbitrariness of the assumption of such velocity for our calculations is obvious. But if the set of figures is not too far from what they actually were, the conclusion would be that the distance of the Earth from Saturn was but a 20th part of what it is now. This would permit us to speculate whether the Earth could at some early period have been a satellite of Saturn. The distance 60 million km is commensurate with the distance of Mercury from the Sun, or 58 million km. Jupiter's satellites revolve at distances up to 24 million km from the primary. Theoretically, Saturn could have satellites as large as the Earth. The Moon is only 1/40th of the Earth in volume, whereas Saturn is 760 times larger than our planet. If such was ever the case, the age of Saturn and the very unusual conditions under which mankind lived in it, and Saturn's worship prior to the deluge, would gain in meaning. The appellative sun used for Saturn would be understood as resulting not only from the great light it emitted for a short period when a nova, but also from its long-standing role of a primary for the revolving Earth. If there is truth in the surmise, and nothing more it is than a surmise, that the Earth was once a satellite of Saturn, the latter must have revolved closer to the sun in order that the Earth should receive heat from it. Saturn exudes little heat. And if the age of Cronus was a golden age, then it is also proper to assume that the conditions on the satellite Earth were not unfavorable for life. The geological record documents extreme climates for the past of the Earth, times when corals grew in the Arctic, and times when the Earth, partly even on the equator, was fettered by ice. Such climates require definitely abnormal conditions that could be created only by varying positions of our planet as an astronomical body. Therefore, surmises as made in this section are not in conflict with geological and paleoclimatological records, yet it is not what could have taken place, but what took place, or the historical record, that is the proper goal for inquest. In the absence of direct indications, we may only deal with the problem of the Earth as a satellite of Saturn as with a hypothetical construction, requiring further elucidation. It is assumed by modern astronomy that the ninth planet, Pluto, was once a satellite of Neptune, which, having collided with Triton, another satellite of the planet, was thrown out of the ring and became an independent planet. The satellite Triton, however, as a consequence of the collision, reversed the direction of its revolution and became a retrograde satellite. Another instance of a postulated conversion of a planetary satellite into an independent planet is discussed by Van Flandre and Harrington in their paper A Dynamical Investigation of the Conjecture that Mercury is an Escaped Satellite of Venus, Icarus 28, 1976, pages 435-440. Thus the principle of a conversion of a satellite into a planet in its own right is not a phenomenon that is discussed here for the first time. The golden age of Saturn or Chronos came to its end with the supreme god of that period, the planet Saturn, was broken up. The age of Chronos was not the earliest age of which man retained some, however dim, memories, but farther into the past the dimness amounts almost to darkness. Rainbow. After the deluge, the hope grew into faith that no such or similar destruction would again come to decimate mankind. The story is told that the Lord made a covenant with Noah, and the following were the terms of the covenant. Then God said to Noah, "I establish my covenant with you, that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of a flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." As a visible sign of the obligation not to repeat the catastrophe, a colorful rainbow appeared for the first time after the deluge. It was a new until then unknown atmospheric phenomenon. In this colored refraction of sunlight in small and suspended drops of water, the rescued believed to see the divine promise not to repeat the flood. And God said, "This is the sign of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you, for all future generations. I set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring the clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the clouds, I will remember my covenant." The covenant, according to the moral conception of the Hebrews, was a reciprocal deed. It was kept only in its promise not to bring a paramount flood upon the earth. The earth and man continued to be shaped and reshaped in further catastrophes before the close of the age of creation that is the theme of the book of Genesis. The confusion of languages. The sequence of events as presented in the book of Genesis places the catastrophe of Babel next after the deluge. "And the whole land was of one language and of one speech. And they said, Go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. And the Lord said, Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth." The rabbinical sources explain that the purpose of the tower was to secure a shelter for the city of Babel in case the deluge should occur another time. The men who are before us God has destroyed with a deluge, if he shall again think fit to be wroth with us, and seek to destroy us even with a deluge, we shall all perish to a man. But come, let us prepare bricks and burn them with fire, that they may withstand the waters, and building them together with asphalt, let us make a high tower the top of which shall reach to heaven, in order that being delivered from the deluge we may find safety in the tower. This purpose of the builders is found also in an account of this catastrophe which the aborigines of Central America transmitted from generation to generation. Xlilk Xochitl, after narrating the story of the deluge which brought to a close the First World Age, Atonasha, and destroyed most of mankind, described the catastrophe which ended the Second Age, or Hecatonasha, the son of wind. "And as men were thereafter multiplying, they constructed a very high and strong Zakuli, which means a very high tower, in order to protect themselves when again the Second World should be destroyed. At the crucial moment their languages were changed, and as they did not understand one another, they went into different parts of the world." The same author also gives another version of the same catastrophe. "When 1,715 years had passed since the deluge, men, were destroyed by a violent hurricane, Hurricane, which carried off trees, mountains, houses and people, and great buildings, although many men and women escaped, especially those that were able to take refuge in caves and places where this great hurricane could not reach. Similarly wrote Gomara, ca. 1510 to 1560, the wind which occurred at that time was so great and of such force that it overthrew all buildings and trees, and even broke mountains apart. Many of the sources which recount the destruction of the Tower of Babel maintain, in close accord with the Mexican account, that the catastrophe was caused by a violent wind. Thus the Sibyl is said to have prophesied. When Ra fulfilled the threats of the great god with which he threatened men, when formerly in the Assyrian land they built a tower, and all were of one speech, and wished to rise even till they climbed unto the starry heaven, then the immortal raised a mighty wind and laid upon them strong necessity, for when the wind threw down the mighty tower, then rose among mankind fierce strife and hate. One speech was changed into many dialects, and earth was filled with divers tribes and kings. In the Book of Jubilees it is said that the Lord sent a mighty wind against the tower and overthrew it upon the earth. The Babylonian account, as transmitted by Abidnews, tells that once men built a high tower where now is Babylon, and when it was already close to heaven, the gods sent winds and ruined the entire scheme. And men, having till then been all of the same speech, received, now, from the gods many languages. Other accounts give the impression that a strong electrical discharge, possibly from an overcharged ionosphere, found a contact body in the high structure. According to a tradition known to the 12th century traveler Benjamin of Tudela, fire from heaven fell in the midst of the tower and broke it asunder. In the tractate Sanhedrin of the Babylonian Talmud it is said, a third of the tower was burnt, a third sank into the earth, and a third is still standing. The Tower of Babel story was found in the most remote parts of the world prior to the arrival of missionaries in those places, thus before the biblical account became known to the Aborigines. For instance, on the island of Hau, part of the Pwamatu, or Tuamatu, islands in Polynesia, the people used to tell that after a great flood the sons of Rata, who survived, made an attempt to erect a building by which they could reach the sky and see the creator god Veta. Orator. But the god in anger chased the builders away, broke down the building, and changed their language, so that they spoke divers tongues. The question of biblical influence was discussed by the folklorist. They, the natives of Hau, declared that this tradition existed already with their ancestors, before the arrival of the Europeans. I leave to them the responsibility for this declaration. All I can certify is that this tradition contains many ancient words which today are no longer understood by the natives. Popolva, the sacred book of the Kishmayas, narrates that the language of all the families that were gathered at Tilan was confused and none could understand the speech of the others. The Kaska, Indian, story makes the result into the cause. The Indians narrate that a great darkness came on, and high winds which drove the vessels hither and thither. The people became separated. Some were driven away. Long afterwards, when in their wanderings they met people from another place, they spoke different languages, and could not understand one another. With this exception, the Kaska story may refer to any great upheaval and is actually an effect of large-scale migrations. The traditions of the peoples make the catastrophe the immediate cause of the confusion of languages and the dispersion as well. While the account in Genesis, and that given by Abidnews and various other sources connect the story with a certain place in Mesopotamia, other traditions localize it in many different countries. In each case the entire population of the world is said to have been affected. If the nature of the catastrophe was cosmic, the same occurrence could have taken place in different countries. In this case the existence of similar traditions in many corners of the globe is of no avail for tracing the migration of ancient tribes. The Arabic tradition makes South Arabia the scene of the upheaval, followed by confusion of languages and migrations. Similar experiences could have been brought about by one and the same cause in many places. It appears that after the flood the plain of Mesopotamia became one of the few cultural centers of the world. Another flood would have caused the utter destruction of the human race, and this was feared because the memory of the flood a few centuries earlier was very vivid. Observations of the movements of the heavenly bodies may have provided a warning of a new catastrophe, and large structures were built for refuge. But when the event came, the structures were overwhelmed and destroyed by hurricanes and powerful electrical discharges. In the rabbinical concept of the seven earths, molded one out of another in successive catastrophes, the generation which built the Tower of Babel inhabited the fourth earth, but it goes on to the fifth earth where the men become oblivious of their origin and home. Those who built the Tower of Babel are told to forget their language. This generation is called the people who lost their memory. The earth which they inhabited was the fifth earth, that of oblivion, Nishaya. In the ancient Mexican traditions it is told that those who survived the catastrophe of the Son of Wind lost their reason and speech. The characteristic of this catastrophe was its influence upon the mental, or mnemonic, capacity of the peoples. The description of it, as told by many tribes and peoples, if it contains authentic features, arouses the surmise that the earth underwent an electromagnetic disturbance, and that the human race experienced something that in modern terms seems like a consequence of a deep electrical shock. The application of electrical current to the head of a human being often results in a partial loss of memory. Also, a loss of speech may be induced by the application of electrodes to specific areas of the brain. Mercury. It can be assumed with a fair amount of probability that the planet that caused the disturbances described above was the planet Mercury. The Greek Hermes, the Babylonian Nebo. To each of the planets is ascribed a world age, and the ages of the other planets, Moon, Saturn, Jupiter, Venus, and Mars, are well discernible. The dominion of Mercury must be looked for in one of the world ages, and one of the world cataclysms was apparently ascribed to this lesser planet. Mercury was a feared god long before Mars, Nergal, became one. As the name of Mount Sinai refers to Sin, the moon, so the name of Mount Nebo in Moab where Moses died was called already in that early time by the name of the planet Mercury. Later in the 7th and 6th centuries before the present era, this god was much venerated, especially by the Chaldeans and other peoples of Mesopotamia, as the names of Nabopolassar and his son Nebuchadnezzar prove. In earlier times Mercury was known to the Sumerians as Inki. Equally pronounced was the position of Thoth, the planet Mercury of the Egyptian pantheon, the theophoric part of the name Thutmose. For the northern peoples, Mercury was Odin. It is characteristic that in many astronomical texts Mercury, the Greek Hermes, the Babylonian Nebo, the Egyptian Thoth, is portrayed as the planet god which had in his dominion the physiological capacity of memory in man, as well as that of speech. According to Augustine, speech is Mercury. Direct information that confirms our assumption is provided by Hyginus. Hyginus wrote that for many centuries men lived without town or laws, speaking one tongue under the rule of Jove. But after Mercury explained the languages of men, whence he is called Hermeneutes, interpreter, for Mercury in Greek is called Hermes, he, too, divided the nations, then discord arose among mortals. The Romans as well as the Greeks pictured Mercury with wings, either on his headgear or at his ankles, and with an emblem, the caduceus, a staff with two snakes winding. The double serpent, caduceus, the emblem of Mercury, is found in ornaments of all peoples of antiquity. A special treatise could be written about this subject. I found the caduceus all around the world. Mercury, or Hermes of the Greeks, was a messenger of the gods that speeded on his errand, sent by Jupiter. Among the satellites that presently orbit each of the giant planets are bodies comparable in size to Mercury, or even larger. Abraham Rockenbach, whose De Cometis Tractatus Novus Methodicus we had occasion to quote when investigating the causes of the deluge, included in his treatise also the following entry. In the year of the world 1944, 288 years after the deluge, a comet was seen in Egypt of the nature of Saturn, in the vicinity of Cairo, in the constellation of Capricorn, and within the space of 65 days it traversed three signs in the sky. confusions of languages and dispersals of peoples followed. On this, the text of the 11th chapter of Genesis speaks in more detail.